You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
For our final piece today, we have our regular Eurovision segment, where Anika chats to our European correspondent Cameron Melgon about all the happenings in Europe. Here they are now.
Unexpectedly heartfelt ukulele performance there from Iceland.
It's Eurovision on 95BFM with our European correspondent Cameron Adams.
So, to get started today, would you be able to provide us an update of what's happened in Ukraine over the past week?
Yeah, I thought I'd also give an update on the refugee situation as well. So, the UNHCR have recorded that 5.5 million refugees have left and are in Europe, as well as having 8.4 million border crossings from Ukraine. Ukrainian forces have withdrawn from Severodonetsk, as we mentioned, and they've also withdrawn from the neighbouring city of Lysychansk. This is after fierce fighting over the past few weeks in the region. So this gives Russia full control of the Luhansk region. And what this means is the next stage of the war will be fighting in the final for the final parts of the Donetsk region in the east of the country. Russia claims that Ukraine fired missiles at the southern city of Belgorod, in which three people died on Sunday. Ukraine have announced a prisoner exchange of 144 soldiers who were captured in Mariupol. And also that British Ukrainian Marine, Aidan Ashlin, he has appealed his death sentence, which was given to him by the separatist DPR. He was also captured after fighting in Mariupol. Turkey has seized a Russian ship reported to be transporting thousands of tons of stolen Ukrainian grain. And following the NATO summit, the UK has pledged another £1 billion in support to Ukraine. This is after Zelensky states it costs $5 billion a month to defend and support Ukraine. And also Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has visited Kiev this past week and also pledged another 100 million AU in military support.
Now, we had the NATO summit in Madrid last week. What were the major outcomes of that meeting?
Yeah, it was quite a hawkish summit. So leaders of 30 alliance member countries, along with Jacinda Ardern, Anthony Albanese, and the Japanese and South Korean leaders met in Madrid last week. They released the 2022 strategic concept. This is their kind of once in a decade strategy document. So this one declared that Russia is the most significant and direct threat to its allies' security, while also stating that it, quote, does not seek confrontation and possess no threat to the Russian Federation, which kind of seems to go kind of a bit opposite to that. It also mentions China for the first time, stating that, quote, the People's Republic of China's stated ambitions and coercive policies challenge interests, security, and values. Although on the next point, it also states it's still open to constructive discussions with China, and NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg also stated that it doesn't view China as an adversary. Not every European member is as vigorous in its opposition against China as the US. It's reported that France and Germany, which have significant trade links with China, are more hesitant. And the strategy concept also mentioned cybersecurity challenges. As we briefly touched on last week, Finland and Sweden's accession to NATO were agreed in principle by Turkey. However, Turkish leader Erdogan is still yet to give formal parliamentary approval. In more practical terms, it slightly increased the troops on the border with Russia, and it also stated that it wanted to gather the ability to rally 300,000 troops in 30 days. So not kind of like the rapid response you'd expect, but I think following what they saw from the Russian buildup of troops on the border with Ukraine, they figured that 30 days is enough time. They also stated that the 2% contribution of GDP to NATO will now try and be a floor instead of a ceiling, although how popular that will be with member states during rising living costs remains to be seen.
And next up, Jacinda Ardern was able to get an agreement on the EU free trade deal with Aotearoa. So would you be able to just outline what has been agreed? Maybe give us a bit of a European perspective of it.
Yeah, so I had a look. There's not much media attention in Europe from it, to be honest. Like, it's quite a small fry compared to Europe's, you know, huge economy. But I thought some interesting stuff happened. So it was the first free trade agreement with provisions over climate commitments from the Paris Accords, with the possibility to sanction each other if commitments are not met. Interestingly as well, there was nothing released or nothing mentioned on the GDPR, which is Europe's kind of data privacy laws. However, it was stated that it expected that New Zealand will update its Privacy Act. So yeah, technical details of all this will be released. Primarily, although the deal primarily means that I think 98% of EU exports will now be tariff-free into New Zealand. So yeah, it's due to be signed by the European Parliament next year, and EU countries will have 2 years to ratify. However, this may take longer. So Canada signed a free trade agreement with the EU in 2017, and it's still not been ratified by quite a few countries like France, Germany, or Ireland. Although this was quite a lot more comprehensive and a wider reaching agreement. So the New Zealand one should probably go by without opposition. And also hopefully it means we can get some Whittaker's chocolate, which will be easier to get.
So next up, Scotland's first leader, Nicola Sturgeon, has announced her plans for a second Scottish independence vote. How likely do you believe that is to go ahead?
Yeah, big news, and although a bit unsurprising. So first leader Nicola Sturgeon last week announced her intentions to hold a second referendum in what's called IndyRef 2. So she's tabled a bill called the Scottish Independence Referendum Bill, which is will be a non-binding referendum. And it'll be a hot debate. So there was a vote in 2014 for Scottish independence, which had Number 10's blessing. However, the outcome of that was 55% no to 45% yes. EU membership was one of the big points shared for staying in the UK. And since the Brexit vote in 2016, in which Scotland voted 62 to 38% to remain in the EU, Sturgeon has consistently called for a second referendum. In January 2020, Boris Johnson refused a second independence vote, saying that it was a once-in-a-generation vote. However, last year, after elections for the Scottish Parliament, the Scottish National Party, which is Nicola Sturgeon's party, and the Greens formed a coalition government. And Sturgeon claims that by campaigning specifically for independence, she has the legitimacy for it. Polling is suggesting around both kind of mid-40s, both for and against a second vote. And if it did go ahead, polling is suggesting a slight support for independence. So what Nicola Sturgeon has stated she aims to do is she aims for the decision to legislate for it to be a legal referendum to go to the Supreme Court. However, just tonight, the Chief Legal Officer of Scotland, Dorothy Bain QC, released a letter to the Supreme Court stating that it may be unlawful without Number 10's blessing. So yeah, it'll basically go to the Supreme Court with a lot of debate and legislation to then see if it can be a proper kind of legal one where they withdraw, or whether it would be a non-binding kind of informatory one to then go back to Number 10 and say, hey, we want like another referendum.
And finally, we have some good news for Kiwis wanting to go overseas. So the working holiday visa with the UK has been given, well, will be given more extensions, is that right?
Yeah. So they've stated that it will be extended from 30 to, or the age cutoff from 30 to 35 years. And it will also, the time you're there will also be extended from 2 years to three. So yeah, it hasn't been given kind of formal approval yet. I think it will come in next year. But very good news for people wanting to go overseas. This is also after last week's announcement of Spain and New Zealand also extending working holiday visa rights as well.
Macedonia with a reggae twist.
That was Eurovision on 95 BFM.
That was Anika speaking to European correspondent Cameron Adams on Eurovision about the French election and other things. Thanks for that, Cameron and Anika. Appreciated your contribution today.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B-card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.